Good evening. Good evening. Welcome everyone to Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is BJ and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey BJ.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God,
I grant this serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. They are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight, which is Step 8 and 9, Part A. This evening, we are discussing Step 8 and 9, Part A. Please join me in welcoming our panel. We have Adam and Alfred. All right, so I will read the first paragraph, which will be on page 76 tonight, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. Okie dokie. Page 76. Now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. We have a list of all persons we have harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. Adam.
Good evening, everybody. The first time that I did an eighth and a ninth step, My motivation for the steps was all the same early on, and it was that I didn't want to die from alcoholism. You know, like that was basically it. I didn't have like really high or really spiritual motives early on. You know, I just, people said, hey, if you don't want to drink again, do what's suggested in this book. And I got sober pretty young. My list of amends that I was going to make was not a huge list. It was it was a lot of school administrators and a lot of parents of friends of mine. But what I came to understand later on was that the purpose of steps 8 and 9 was to further remove it. They talk about the debris in there, but it was like to remove these obstacles, these things that get in the way of me being able to help the still suffering alcoholic. That's why I do a 4-step. That's why I do a fifth step. That's why I do an eighth and a ninth step, is because my sponsor that I had when I was about 2 years sober said, all these things you're doing are so that you can be of maximum service to this suffering alcoholics. And I try to impress that upon guys that I get to work with today, you know, is that the purpose of these steps is not to get rich. It's not to get happy. It's not to get your wife or husband back or get your kids back or get your job back or anything else. The purpose of the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous is so that I can be of use to suffering alcoholics. And when I do an eighth and a ninth step, what I'm doing is I'm removing that stuff in my head that causes me to think about myself, which I love to do, and it's allowing me to think about you for maybe an extra few minutes every day, and maybe I'll have more time to answer that phone when you call at, you know, 11 o'clock at night or 3 in the morning or when I'm playing with my kids outside or whatever it is. And I didn't have such a long list, and I didn't get a ton of relief from 8 and 9 because, like I said, it wasn't huge, but it felt good to know that I was doing what sober people were supposed to be doing, if that makes any sense. And I'll pass it over to Alfred.
Thanks, Adam. My name's Alfred. I'm an alcoholic. Yeah. Alfred, is this good? For a sound? Okay. I was just talking to Iran before the meeting, and I had this memory of us. We had a Labor Day picnic like 6 years ago, and it was really cool to just be present for that. And it was a crazy place, and I mean, I almost fell through the steps going up to the. But it just watching people just grow in this program is an amazing thing, and part of that is through this step. And one of the most important things about this step is it's just a list. And praying for willingness. I don't have to do anything right now. That's the beauty of it. Just like step four, all I'm doing is writing stuff. I don't have to talk to anybody about it. But I have to do, you know, the steps in order. I mean, my first time going through the steps, it was a mix of the Big Book and the 12 and 12, but I did get some relief. And one of the things, on my first eight-step list, it wasn't very long at all, and I thought, you know, I heard other people sharing all these things about their eighth and ninth step, and I remember talking to my sponsor about it. He goes, what, do you wish you messed up more? And I was like, well, I guess not. But that was my first time through, and it was just kind of like, I did what I did at the time is what I was shown, and I did stay sober through it. But there came a point in my sobriety where it wasn't enough. And it was like it freed me from drinking, but not my alcoholism. And it took a few more times going through the steps and doing inventory and then really getting down to different things that came up with different people. And then ultimately making the list and then putting all that on the cards so I could identify what, who was on the list and what harms I had done to get clear on that, so I don't go in, well, I'm supposed to make things right with you. I really don't know what I did, but I'm sorry. And what are you going to tell me? You know, it's like, it's not about that. It's just, I have to just be clear before I do this stuff. And like Adam was saying, this is helping me to get free. And the other part is, okay, making a list, and then what? Well, I'm praying to be willing. And that's what I'm doing there. Some amends I'm not willing to do right now. But there are others that I have done that I've gotten freedom from. And that's where I've really grown, is going through and identifying those things in four, sharing them in five, not getting kicked out of my own house for sharing this stuff, and then going to God with six and seven, which I still don't understand, but I do it anyways. And then steps eight and nine happen, and all I can tell is each time I've gone through the steps, I've grown, and I'm not the same person I was that I walked in here July 10th of 2004. So something is happening, and all I'm doing is just doing what this stuff asks me to do. Sometimes I still balk. I'm not perfect at this stuff, but it's just identifying what's going on and then correcting it. Like now with a 10th step, sometimes I gotta look at, you know, I know now what I did, and I got to clean it up pretty quick. Because otherwise I'm going to be crazy, like Adam was talking about. I just don't like to be obsessing about stuff today. I'd rather be present, you know, if it's not for someone else, just so I can go to sleep at night. So with that, thanks, and I look forward to seeing what else we talk about.
Thank you. I apologize. I meant to read steps 8 and 9 before we got started. Step 8 is, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. And step 9 is, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. So moving on to the second reading, also on page 76. Probably there are still some misgivings. As we look over the list of business acquaintances and friends we have hurt, we may feel diffident about going to some of them on a spiritual basis. Let us be reassured. To some people, we need not and probably should not emphasize the spiritual feature on our first approach. We might prejudice them. At the moment, we are trying to put our lives in order, but this is not an end in itself. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. It is seldom wise to approach an individual who still smarts from our injustice to him and announce that we have gone religious. In the prize ring, this would be called leading with the chin. Why lay ourselves open to being branded fanatics or religious bores? We may kill a future opportunity to carry a beneficial message, but our man is sure to be impressed with a sincere desire to set right the wrong. He is going to be more interested in a demonstration of goodwill than in our talk of spiritual discoveries.
Yeah, thank goodness for that paragraph, because I was not in any position early on to be talking about my spiritual discoveries or spirituality at all. I was I guess I was like late to the game on the whole spirituality thing, and that was okay. Like, you know, I that's just who I am. I don't really care what people think about that. You know what I mean? It's just, that's my thing, right? And but I was able to go to people, and I was able to just say to them, not, oh, I have this new spiritual way of life, but I was able to say to people that I was making amends to, I don't live the way I used to live anymore. What can I do to make right what I did to you? And it was a simple statement. You know, it was people that were before me in the program said, you don't have to make this complicated. You know, you can just go to them, and like it said in there, a sincere desire to set things right. Like, that's a big deal to me, you know. I don't take that statement lightly. You know, thankfully, no one asked me to do anything that was really difficult or absurd or anything like that. But I was willing to do whatever people needed me to do to set things right. Again, you know, I was reading this book as very literal with a sponsor, you know, there were some tricky amends in there, but he guided me through those, and he got experience from other people in his life to help me through certain things. But, you know, again, I was driven by this fear of not wanting to drink again. My story was an attempted suicide that didn't work out, and I felt like if I ever drank again, and I still feel like if I ever drink again, that it'll work out, you know, like it... there won't be a chance, you know, and that I don't live in that with that constant thought in the back of my mind, but I know how I am, and I know how I was drinking, and I had gotten to that place where I couldn't imagine life with or without alcohol, and being at that jumping off point and whatever, the quicksand stretching around me in all directions, you know, whatever you want to say, but you know, I was willing to do whatever people said I needed to do to work the steps. And thankfully, I didn't have to stress this spiritual feature, because I would have had no idea, like, how to even begin to do it. Thanks.
This is a very difficult one, and I still get to practice it a lot, because business associates are people I deal with on a regular basis. And one really stood out, because I felt... through my inventory, I would find out, and even though it didn't take long when I was drinking to identify the people, I felt threatened by them. like I'm here doing this big job, and then all of a sudden here comes this one guy, and he's a big pain in the butt, and he's just taking over, and he just pisses me off, and then it just does like good grief. And then I remember one time, I used to love to gossip about him, and one time I didn't want to go to this one thing in Colorado for work because I knew he'd be there and I'd be by myself. And then what I usually like to do is disarm people around him. And then I went to talk to this guy about him. He goes, I was expecting him to be like everybody else. He goes, what is your problem? This guy's here taking care of this stuff. And I felt like 2 cents. And then that set me apart. And I realized what I was doing. And then later on, just this guy, just thinking about him, sent, you know, shiver me timbers, you know, just get me upset and it get me irritated. And, you know, one time I called him for some help at work and he said something nasty. And then I remember going through another inventory and his name was on it. And basically I had to do what this stuff asked me to do. I had to, you know, call him up. He lived in Michigan and I was living here. And then I left a message because I couldn't get a hold of him, and he called me back, and I said, hey, my name's Alfred, I used to work with you. And then I said, you know, there are certain things that happened, and this is what I did, and I'm walking a new life now, and I have to do this to stay away from drinking. Is there anything I can do to make it right? And then after that, we had a pretty decent conversation, and he hasn't really bothered me. I mean, it's like funny that people could be, and that's happened on a few times, but I can be for free and at peace with people when I do these things. And it's not always pleasant, I mean, to call people or talk to people. I mean, people at work, I'd be like, had to do similar things that really irritated the crap out of me. And then I just had to go to them and then asking how I can make it right, and they tell me some things about myself that they said, I see potential in you. I don't know why you're, basically, it was just like, why aren't you doing this stuff? You know, you could be doing a whole lot more. And I think when I'm, you know, hearing myself say that now is like, there's a lot more I can be doing, but when I'm full of resentment and unwillingness to set things straight, then I'm blocked, and then I can't be effective. And as soon as I see this person walk into a meeting, I'm like, there he is. You know, it's like, and then I'm worried about what he's going to do and say. And then I miss opportunities. And then one thing I still hate it today is like, and I'm doing better at it because I'm a bit more apt to speak my mind now to some extent. But before it'd be like, I'm about to say something and then I'm a little bit afraid and then they say it. Like, why didn't I say that? You know, but then now it's like, okay, you know, just I try to just say this stuff or I don't, but I can't afford to get ate up about it. And then this step helps me to be helpful to them and other people. And it's all about getting free. And I'd rather be free today than not. So thanks.
Thanks, Alfred.
Thank you. The third reading is on page 77. We don't use this as an excuse for shying away from the subject of God. When it will serve any good purpose, we're willing to announce our convictions with tact and common sense. The question of how to approach the man we hated will arise. It may be he has done us more harm than we have done him, and though we may have acquired a better attitude toward him, we are still not too keen about admitting our faults. Nevertheless, with a person we dislike, we take the bit in our teeth. It is harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial to us. We go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feeling and expressing our regret.
I didn't have any people that I hated that I had to make amends to. I was the guy that was always just agreeable to whatever you wanted to do because I was obsessed with you liking me, and that was all that mattered. So like my drinking really made no sense because I ultimately alienated everybody around me that I cared about. But that's how it was, right? But for me, like, when I read this, what I think about are those amends that were hard for me to make, difficult ones I didn't want to do. I thought, oh, I'll just be bothering them, or, oh, you know, like, it's not a big deal. And my sponsor was like, no, it is a big deal. You need to make that amends, you know. And what I always found were that the difficult amends were the ones that brought the most relief and brought the most, lightness or whatever in my spirit. And that's still true today. You know, the amends that are hardest for me to make on a daily basis today are, you know, to people like my wife or coworkers, or, you know. But yet when I just say those like magic words, like, I made a mistake, I was wrong, you know, as hard as it is for me to muster up the ego deflating courage to do that, I feel much better afterwards. There's something cool in Alcoholics Anonymous about doing the right thing, even when you don't want to do the right thing. It's an amazing feeling. Minutes, maybe hours, maybe a day later, because I feel like I can like go to people in AA and be like, "Hey, like I did this cool thing," and they're like, "Wow, that is really cool." Like, I can't share it with other people that aren't in AA, because other people would be like, "No, like you were supposed to do that good thing," you know? And I'm like, "But that's not my nature," you know? And amends are that way, you know. I do a semi-regular 10th step at night, you know, and it always says, "Do we owe an apology?" And a lot of times the answer is yes. You know, and it's that person laying next to me in bed that's sleeping that I owe an apology to, you know? And I want to just sweep it under the rug and pretend like it's not happening, you know? Anyways, I got a little off track. So I'll pass over to Alfred. Thank you.
I like that because it gives us instructions of what to say when we don't know what to say. I mean, it's like, this book is pretty masterly, like it says, and just that, if I don't know what to do, it gives me some more instructions. You can say these things to these people, and it's pretty cool. And that's what's really helped me, especially with that guy. But I remember, relationships with women, it was very and is very difficult for me. I would get into relationships and then I would be like, okay, well maybe someone better will come along, so maybe I'll just stop what I'm doing and run away. And then every time, okay, so that would happen, or I would go out to drink at a bar, pick up a lady, and then, but then it'd be like, okay, I'm going to go to the bar, I'm going to ask her out, she's going to say no, and I'm going to get drunk. And then I was like, well, I'll just go get drunk and cut out all the drama. And then not even worry about that. And that's no way to live. And then with this one lady I was dating in Missouri, it was going pretty good, and then it just like, I just had this, you know, my mind will trip to something else, and I've seen that in my fourth step in my sex inventory, and then I just stopped talking to her. I mean, she's leaving all sorts of messages, like friendly ones, and then they just like, then that's like when I'm trying to escape and evade, then I'm like, when I'm doing that, then I start having dreams about running into her, and then I'm like worried about running into her on the street. I mean, this is what happens. And then it's like, her dad was my dentist, so I had to switch dentists. So, and then I would dream about running into her and stuff, and then I moved. And I would even be like asking people, have you seen her? You know, where does she hang out? Or like, you know, not even just having. And then one of my first amends was she lived in Missouri, I wasn't sure what to do with the book, talked about writing a letter and explaining what happened. So I did that, and then she responded, and we corresponded a few times, and now we're friends, we're okay. But and the cool thing about that is the dreams stopped and the worries stopped. Even though my job took me back here, I still was concerned, and it was just something in the back of my head because I left something unsettled. And I think that's one of the big things with this. We can settle things that are unsettled. And one of the relationships I was in, it was very tumultuous. I have no idea. But going through it, see, this is one of the things where she made amends to me. No. Yes. What was it? Anyways, well, it's about the whole part in the fourth step where it talks about we disregard the other people's entirely. We look at where we're at fault. And this is where it's so important to come in, because I think I still hear people say, even people I sponsor say, well, my part. I'm like, no, it's your where you were at fault. Because when what BJ just read was like, we keep it focused on ourselves. It's not about the other person, what they did, said, or anything. It's all about what I did. And I think when this other person was trying to, they were making an amends with me, I was trying to play the game and then to, well, what about my part? And it's, and she was like, it's not about you. And that hurts when it's not about me. But still, until we had a heartfelt talk one night, and it just all came out. And that's when I saw what part, where I was at fault in the relationship and what I had done and how I was selfish, self-centered, dishonest, and frightened. And then it's just, but it takes going through the inventory and talking to somebody about it. Because like lots of times, for a while there, I was using the steps as a management tool. I was trying to manage my life with the steps and not letting God do that. And then it's like when things come up, I need to do these things to get right with my fellows. But I can't use this as a tool to be like, I got to do this inventory right now so I get back in the relationship. You know, it's like one of my friends, he went through a breakup and he was like, yeah, I think I need to start going through the steps. And well, you know, it's like, don't try to manage your life. You don't try to get something out of doing this stuff. It's like, try to get the freedom so you won't drink again. So I won't drink again. That's what's important for me. It's just, you know, just getting a little bit more free. So, thanks.
Still on page 77. Under no condition do we criticize such a person or argue. Simply, we tell him that we will never get over drinking until we have done our utmost to straighten out the past. We are there to sweep off our side of the street, realizing that nothing worthwhile can be accomplished until we do so, never trying to tell him what he should do. His faults are not discussed. We stick to our own. If our manner is calm, frank, and open, we will be gratified with the result. In 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. Sometimes the man we are calling upon admits his own fault, so feuds of years standing melt away in an hour. Rarely do we fail to make satisfactory progress. Our former enemies sometimes praise what we are doing and wish us well. Occasionally, they will offer assistance. It should not matter, however, if someone does throw us out of his office. We have made our demonstration, done our part. It's water over the dam.
I think that was like the hardest part for me when I was making amends, was that like I had to really do my, like, be very deliberate about clearing out expectations out of my head about what was going to happen, you know? I had a good sponsor who thankfully removed all those amends from, didn't remove them from the list, but removed my, the amends I wanted to make were to a lot of ex-girlfriends, because I wanted to know how great things were going now, and like, you know, they really missed out on the catch that I was, you know, 3 months sober or whatever it was. And you know, my sponsor just said, you know, your amends to them is to stay out of their life and to never bother them again. And I was like, all right. I was like, well, shoot, you know, those were the ones I was looking forward to. But even the amends I made, I tried to go into them with that sort of mantra in my head of like, this is about me. This is about me doing my part. This is about me cleaning up my side of the street. No matter what they say, it's not going to change the fact that I'm going in to make this amends, you know? And it's going to be successful as soon as those words come out of my mouth. No matter what happens after I finish my part and say, okay. And they may say, all right, cool, have a great day, you know? Or they may say, wow, you know, thanks. Or they may say, like, I don't care. Or it doesn't matter. Getting back to what I said earlier on, you know, this is about me cleaning up my past as best as I possibly can so that I have less stuff to obsess over and I have more time to think about other people in Alcoholics Anonymous and in my life. With my wife, you know, even today, it's difficult to get those expectations out of my head that when I make that amends to her over something silly, I want sometimes for her to also make the amends as well. Like, you know, it would feel good, you know, to have that happen. And I should disclose my wife's in the program also. And, you know, she's an outstanding member of Alcoholics Anonymous. It doesn't always happen that way, you know? And you know what? When I actually do what's suggested there, which is focus on my part, tell that person what I'm doing, make my amends, and have no expectations, it doesn't matter. I don't care. I'm at peace. As soon as those words come out of my mouth, I'm at peace. And, you know, that to me is a way that I have, through practice, gotten closer to my higher power, I think, in some ways, because it's not like me to not have expectations of other people. The steps in the 12th step, it promises me a spiritual awakening if I do the steps. That's what it says. You know, it says like as the result of these steps, you know, I'm going to have a spiritual awakening. I thought that was like a big thing, you know. I thought this something fantastic was going to happen when I got done working the steps. But I had a sponsor who said, you know, you don't know what that spiritual awakening is going to be. You know, it might be something as small as, for instance, making an amends and not having an expectation that other person is going to make the amends back. You know, and I've had moments like that. And that is a spiritual thing for me, you know, because it just doesn't always happen. You know, as much as I try, it just, in my mind, the story works out so much better if we both make the amends and then we hug and embrace and talk about how silly we were for having that feud over whatever it was, you know, and like it just doesn't always work out that way. And but when I can go into that process thinking more about being of service to others, I don't have the expectation because it doesn't matter what's going to happen. And I didn't have any bad experiences making amends. I didn't have anybody throw me out of their office or whatever, you know. Most people are just like, cool, man, good. Keep doing that, you know. Like, and that was nice, you know. I'm not going to lie. That was a really good feeling. But, yeah, that's all I got. Thanks.
I had a college professor who was very disrespectful to, and I would show up late, and I would not agree with him, and just wasn't a great student. And it was one of those things that at the time I didn't think bothered me, but it came up on inventory. And I remember I was like, okay, I guess I'll go track him down and then call him and then talk to him and kind of go through the whole process. And he was basically, well, I'm glad you're getting help. And he was like, wow. It's funny when you call people sometimes, it's like, wow, what a surprise. That was like 20 years ago. But it's stuff that's going on in my head. It's like lots of times I'll bring up stuff and they're like, what are you talking about? But it's just like, it's what I've made it up to be. And I remember, oh my God, this one's horrible. I learned a big lesson. Do not get drunk and talk about your girlfriend when she's not there to her friends. It didn't work out well for me. And don't do it with tequila, no way. Because I threw up a lot that night. And then she called me the next day and basically said, you know, they told me what you were talking about with them. I was like, oh my God. And then it was just like, and then I knew that we broke up, of course. And then I remember the last time I saw her before college got out, I had this really smart, like really cool, like line to say when she said, see you later. And then it just didn't come out. And I was like, but then years later, I had to call her too and explain what was going on with my life and then where I was at, and I had to set things straight because I didn't treat her very well, and I talked about her and it wasn't the right thing to do. And that was another one where we became friends today. But it was just kind of just seeing where I was at fault and then having to go talk to people about it isn't pleasant, and it is scary, but God has carried me through those. And that's and that's what I got to remember, is because I gave my life to God in the third step, and then I did a lot of work. And God's not going to drop me on my head in the ninth step. I mean, sometimes, you know, stuff happens unexpected, but in my experience, it's been good. But I've gotten free. And I remember this, one of my friends, he didn't want to drink at all, and this was in college, and one night I just kept getting tired of drinking by myself, and I just kept badgering him until he drank and got loaded, and then I had to call him and say, hey, it was wrong of me to get you to drink when you didn't want to. And then he was like, I can't remember what he said, but he wasn't all that bent out of shape about it, but he had some religious convictions, but I kept pushing them, and that I carried that with me for a while. But like everything else, it's offloaded. It's water over the dam now. I don't have to keep holding on to these things, and that's a really good thing, to not have to keep going back and playing the tape again. And it's like in the show Preacher, Hell, you know, they keep showing the same event over and over again. And then when I do the amends, it's like I get free from that. And it's pretty cool. So, thanks.
Thanks, Alfred.
The next reading is on page 78. Most alcoholics owe money. We do not dodge our creditors. Telling them what we are trying to do, we make no bones about our drinking. They usually know it anyway, whether we think so or not. Nor are we afraid of disclosing our alcoholism on the theory it may cause financial harm. Approached in this way, the most ruthless creditor will sometimes surprise us. Arranging the best deal we can, we let these people know we are sorry. Our drinking has made us slow to pay. We must lose our fear of creditors no matter how far we have to go, for we are liable to drink if we are afraid to face them.
I got sober when I was 21, and in some ways, like, I hadn't yet caused much financial distress in my own life because I had nothing, you know. I was just a big mooch, and I just, you know, sucked off everybody else. And but in sobriety, I have had financial difficulties, you know, and I've had to call. Well, again, you know, I didn't dodge my creditors, you know. When my wife and I had our first kid, we didn't have any money to pay the hospital. We're like not good planners at that point in our lives. And, you know, it was just like a quick phone call to the hospital. And I said, hey, look, I know you guys want, you know, whatever it was, $3,000 or something, but you're not going to get that anytime soon from me. But I'll tell you what I can do, you know. I said, can I give you some money every month? And, you know, and pay you off that way. And they said, that would be terrific, you know. And yeah, honesty is the best policy with that sort of stuff, you know. And I don't know. I just don't have a lot to say about creditors because, I was too stupid and young to, like, this was pre, like, everybody gets a credit card world, you know. So I had that happened, yes, I probably would still be dealing with that wreckage. But luckily no one was stupid enough to give me a line of credit or let me borrow a large sum of money. And I was able to somehow yeah, coming into Alcoholics Anonymous with not much debt. So I'll pass over to Alfred. Maybe he's got a little more of that.
Oh, my story is the polar opposite.
There we go.
They love giving me credit cards. And, wow, this is really apropos because I hit a financial bottom last week. It's been something that's been... It's like I was talking to a friend of mine, you know, if I don't look at it, it's not there. It doesn't exist. If I deny it, it doesn't exist. And I had to go on a business trip, and my business card was suspended, and I was like, oh, my God. And then I had somehow got, like, $1,000 charged on my government card, and then I just wasn't paying attention to my bills, and at some point, I just... missed paying it, and I was about to go on a trip, and then I didn't have enough money to pay it, so I had to call the company and say, what do I need to do so I can travel? And then my finances are just in a shambles. I mean, I'm really living, you know, paycheck to paycheck, and it's, I'm not really engaging the seventh tradition in my life. I'm not being self-supporting. I'm at the point now where I cannot ask my parents for more money. Because that's what my go-to would be, like, hey, I need to borrow $500 because... And it's getting embarrassing. I mean, I'm 45. And this is a big thing for me now. And I remember I have another problem. It's called Star Wars. And they had Forest Friday where they released a whole bunch of new stuff. And I was talking to my sponsor about money, and he was like, well, how will this work into your new inventory, and how will, because we're talking about, you know, if I get into a relationship with somebody, I can't have my finances are shambles, like, I can't hardly support myself, how can I support other people, and it's not even that if I have a relationship with someone else or not, but it's just for me. I mean, I've got some medical issues that if I'm not, you know, financially fit, I mean, I might not be able to retire when I physically need to. But, so that's what I'm taking a look at right now. And a couple things about my, when I came to AA, I was strapped with debt. And when I'm in untreated alcoholism, even today, like eBay and Amazon Prime are my buddies. I mean, I was having package, and you get that high from getting the package at your house. And then just getting that relief. And then it's like, it's okay until the credit card bill comes up. It's like, ooh. But maybe if I don't... And then I was going on a vacation a few... like a month ago, and I didn't have enough money for that, so I had to go and do some financial wizardry, and then I think I had like almost $200 in change that I was able to convert into money, and then it worked out, but I shouldn't have had to do that. That's like when I was drinking, in order to get more alcohol, I was a bad planner. I would go get loaded and not buy enough. And then I was like, man, I can't drink and drive. If I drink and drive, I'll lose my job. If I get a DUI or something, you know, who knows. But then I would dig up pocket change to take a cab to get to the liquor store to buy liquor with my credit card to go back to the house. I mean, a normal person would just go like, well, I'm out. I might as well just go to bed. Not for me. And so... one of the first, and then my debt, I mean, my grandmother died. I got a pretty decent inheritance that paid off most of my debt, and then it went back up again. And this is one of the things I'll eventually have to, I owe my parents a good bit of money, and I'm just now starting to pay them back because it's so easy to stop paying your parents the money you owe them because they're not going to hound me. Now, Home Depot will. My parents won't. And that same vacation was having financial problems. Home Depot's like, hey, you got to pay for your, you know, washing machine you just bought. I'm like, oh my God. So I was like, how can I set up payments? And I'm doing this while I'm on vacation in this convention hall. So I had to make a payment and then set up payments. And this is one of the things that I was talking, I see a therapist for some stuff, and one of them was, my finances were just out of control, and he suggested I contact United Way. And then I was like, no way, you know, why would I want to do that, you know? Because my debt was just so overwhelming. And then I talked to them, and I was doing a financial inventory. I just brought them my bills. And then they basically set up a plan where I pay them money every month, and they manage my payments, and they reduce my interest, and they reduce the amount I had to pay. And I've been in it for 4 years. And to include the about $9,000 I added over the past couple of years, I should be out of debt within a year. If I stop buying Star Wars stuff. Like I have to tell myself I did buy a Star Wars Lego advent calendar yesterday and I shouldn't have. But still, that making those payments is getting people off my back, and then I'm getting free without having to resort to other means. And it's freeing to know, it's like, oh my God, I'm almost done. And the biggest thing with about financial amends is, like, I want it done now. And it's not going to get done now. It happens over time. And, like, I started to pay my parents back some more. And then one of the funny things about owing people money is when people owe you money. And, like, I had to forgive a friend a good bit of debt. But then there's this, like, $300. And then you know what comes up when I... Two things will come into my head. The first one is, I can ask him for the money. It's been a couple years, so... And then the next thing is, the Bible passage where the guy's like, where's the money you owe me? And he's like, I forgave you all this debt. You know, why don't you, you know, treat him like I treated you? And it's like, man, that's tough. And how can I mean, my finances and my problems, I can't strap my burdens on other people. And that's one of the big things, is I got to own up to this stuff. And now there's a line in the play Iran, and Iran's like, I'm a man and I don't ask for help. And asking for help is one of the biggest things when it comes to finances, because I can't do it on my own. And when you're faced with this stuff and it's time to do something about it, it's uncomfortable, because sometimes it's like the thought of living without things is just like the thought of living without alcohol. But, you know, I mean, this step with the money business is just becoming a very important in my life. And it just takes hitting a new bottom. It's like when I'm ready to see it, I see it. But so yeah, thanks.
Thanks, Aaron.
I'll read the final reading, and then he gets a couple minutes to wrap up. Final reading is on page 79. Although these reparations take innumerable forms, there are some general principles which we find guiding, reminding ourselves that we have decided to go to any lengths to find a spiritual experience. We ask that we be given strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. We may lose our position or reputation or face jail, but we are willing. We have to be. We must not shrink at anything.
I like when the big book gives me the prayer, because I'm not always so good at constructing them myself. And I do remember, you know, asking for strength and direction to do the right thing as I was in this eighth and ninth step. And there's always been this one thing that's bugged me, and I've never had a solution to it, and all the sponsors I've ever asked have never really had a solution to it. But it's always been an amends that I've wanted to make, and I don't know how to make it. And I've even, like, turned it over to God, but, like, I still have never, like, felt like I've really ever been able to make it. And it was I was driving drunk, and I grew up in Virginia Beach, and I was driving drunk and I had this like really like awful car. It was like I bought it at an auction, like a couple doors didn't open, one of the doors wouldn't stay shut, you know, like it didn't go in reverse. I mean, it was just like a lot wrong with this car, but it was $500, you know, and it got me through my senior year of high school. And I was driving drunk one time with a buddy and it was raining. I was probably driving on like bald tires, and I wasn't like Alcoholics Anonymous drunk, you know, like drunk like we get, but I was like legally drunk. And and a guy, it was raining, it was that type of rain where you should probably stop and just pull over, and a guy stopped in front of me, and of course like I was a little late to the break, you know, like, oh, you know, and like I tried to stop and I slammed into the back of the guy. And I remember me and my buddy were sitting there and I'm like, oh man, I don't know what to do. And backseat's just full of like beer and liquor. We're heading to a party, and I'm like, I'm nowhere near home either, you know. Pre-cell phone, this is 1996, 1997, something like that. You know, like parents had cell phones, but kids didn't have cell phones, right? Not many. Sat there and I kept waiting for the guy to get out or person to get out. I say guy. I don't know whether there was a guy or a lady, but no one ever got out. And I was like, and my buddy's like, let's just go, man. And I was like, all right, let's just go. You know, and like I remember I just pulled around and I just took off, you know, and still went to the party, you know, with a busted up car, but still went to the party. But I've always felt like I wanted to make some kind of amends for that, because like I don't know whether I like seriously hurt that person. I don't think I killed that person. I mean, I can be honest about that, but I don't know what happened. I don't know what kind of car it was. I don't know what day it was. I don't know what time it was. I don't even remember what street it was on. You know what I mean? Like I have no way of figuring this riddle out, right? But it's always bugged me, and it's an amends that I'll never be able to make, I guess, you know, other than, I don't know, like not driving drunk ever again, or, you know, obeying traffic laws on a regular basis and not driving like a maniac. But I can tell you that I'm willing, you know, and I would if I could. If somebody knew some way and they said, hey, this is a great idea, and I'd be totally open to it. Again, I'm willing to do whatever Alcoholics Anonymous asks me to do in steps 8 and 9, because I enjoy the freedom I get from doing the 8th and the 9th step. And I enjoy getting part of my life back, being able to walk down the street and keep my head up and not feel like I have to duck and hide from anybody. I'm a really grateful alcoholic tonight, and thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Adam. Yeah, there's a couple things that come to mind with this, especially when you're facing jail or you think you are. It's like one of the ones I stole from a surplus store when I was a kid, and it always bothered me. And it's funny how it's like I stole these uniforms, and because another friend of ours had some different ones, so we wanted to be different. And then it's like, someone was saying this before, like sometimes when you steal something, just somehow it disappears later from your, I don't know what happened to these uniforms I stole. I mean, I wore them a couple times and then they were gone, but I was always driving by the surplus store and be a little uncomfortable. And I was on the corrections committee, and it was corrections meeting night, and I knew I needed to make this amends, and it was just on me, and I called my sponsor, so I think I need to make this amends. He goes, well, it's a cash amends, have cash in hand. So I figured out how much it was, and I remember pulling into the place, and I was talking to my sponsor, and we prayed, and then I went in, and they just told him my name and what I had done, and I had stole from him, and this is what I did, and this is the amount I think I owe you. Is there anything I can do to make it right? And I was sure they were going to call the cops, and they didn't. And they're like, well, that's when my dad owned the store, and you know, you can just continue to shop here, and thank you for what you're doing, and you know, best of luck. And then I went out the door, and I was like, I figured I talked to my sponsor, and then I figured I did something wrong, so I went back in to say, are you sure everything's all right? And of course it was, and then I went to the corrections meeting and still continued. I went to jail that week, but it was for carrying the message and not the wreckage. So just when we put ourselves in God's hands, we don't know what will happen, but it's better than we could have planned. Thanks.
Thanks, Alfred.
Thank you guys so much. Can we thank our panel? We're now going to pass our seventh tradition baskets. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it used to. At this time, are there any AA-related announcements?
Hey, everyone. Travis.
Hi, Travis.
My home group, Uptown Young & Sober, is going to event with Downtown Young & Sober on Saturday, September 30th at Beach Garden Park, which is out by Virginia Beach Oceanfront. It's going to be a Seeds of Growth workshop beginning at 2 p.m. We're going to be grilling, and then after the workshop, there's going to be an ultimate Frisbee tournament. So if you'd like to come out or want more information, talk to me after the meeting. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Anybody else? Kendra?
I'm Kendra. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Kendra.
LGBT Center's celebrating fourth year anniversary on Thursday, this coming Thursday. It's normal meetings at 6:30. We're going to have eating at 5:30 and then a regular meeting at 6:30. So it's on Thursday, this coming Thursday. You can bring something if you want. It's just like canned foods and stuff. We're not doing like chicken and the whole kit and caboodle.
Right on, thank you. This home group, Simple Actions, we're going to be having supper and a speaker Monday, October 16th, so mark your calendars. It's going to be a 6 p.m. potluck, and at 7 p.m., Billy H. from Madison, Virginia, is going to be sharing. So we've got some orange flyers over there. We'd love to see you guys. Any other announcements?
Yeah, I have two. My name's Alfred. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Alfred.
I'm on September 20th in Richmond. The Buford Road Group is celebrating their, I think, their 8th anniversary, and they're going to have a speaker at 7. It'll be Sam P. from Madison, West Virginia, where Madison, Virginia, where Billy's from. And then on September the 29th, the Olive Branch Group at St. George's in Newport News is having their potluck, and they're going to have a speaker. It's, was it Deborah M.? A lady from Virginia Beach. And she'll be sharing her experience, strength, and hope at 8. So dinner's at 7 and speaker's at 8. So if you have any questions about either of those, you can see me after the meeting.
Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Could home group members raise their hands? Newcomers. Is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would love to welcome you.
My name is Chris, an alcoholic.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, Chris. Welcome.
Kevin, alcoholic.
Hey, Kevin. Hey, Kevin. Welcome.
Anybody else? Hi, Bella. Okay. We have literature over here on this clear table. It's available for purchase. Anything you can fold is free. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting if you'd like to buy a book. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, don't delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available at this table after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come up and ask questions. Reminder, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, civilactions.net. Can we thank our panel one more time? Thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on steps 8 and 9 at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at IHOP tonight because Class Bustle is closed. So yeah, we'll be on IHOP. It's 21st Street and kind of Monticello, Lelandish. yeah, talk to somebody if you need directions. And also, Simple Actions Home Group members, we'd like to meet very briefly after the Lord's Prayer if we can group up. Could I have a volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on page 164?
I'm Grant, an alcoholic. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thanks.
Thank you. Let's close the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Oh, yeah.